Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for bearing with the problem earlier with the audio. There was a mis-scheduling as to the time zone. This is Flora Esteves. I'm the operations manager of the Greater IBM Connection. Welcome to Career on Track number 6 with Molly Wendell, our expert for the Greater IBM series, Career on Track. Molly, like the rest of you, is a Greater IBMer, meaning that she at one point worked for the IBM Corporation but has gone on to other ventures. And like you, she is part of a community that she is hoping will create great benefits for her both personally and business-wise. We need to go over a couple of house rules before we begin our call. And for that, let me just show you Molly's picture on my own. There's about 110 of you on the web. Everyone needs to be on both the audio and the web conferencing. If you are in the web and you're not in the audio, you won't be able to hear me. If you're only on the audio and have not joined the web conference, you will not be able to see Molly's charts. While we wait for Molly to join us, I want to make sure that everybody is aware of the fact that we will be recording this conference. We will record it so that those of you who are not able to make it today live will be able to catch the replay as a podcast on the Greater IBM Connection later on. Without further ado, operator, if we could have Ms. Molly Wendell begin our conference. Thank you all once again, and here's Molly.
Thank you so much, Flor. Well, I'm really excited to talk to you today about the mistakes that people are making, the top 7 job search mistakes that you need to avoid in 2010. Well, while we're waiting for the control of the charts, we will let me just give you a little introduction. I know Flor introduced me a little bit, but let me tell you a little bit about my background in terms of how these job search mistakes, how I'm identifying these job search mistakes and what I'm seeing from people. I've been working with people in the job search since 2002, and I didn't plan on working with people in the job search. It kind of happened because I was in the job search myself for 2 years and 3 days. And during that time, I learned a lot of things and ended up starting a company helping executives in the job search. And what I've been seeing year after year is that people continue to make the same mistakes about their job search, and it's absolutely crazy about how they think they're going to get a job the same old way. And a lot of people think that they're going to get a job because the way they always got a job, and that's someone calling them and saying, hey, I have something for you, whether it's an old boss, an associate. But those calls don't seem to be coming anymore. And so we really need to take a look at a new method of how we need to go about getting a job. So I now have control of the charts, and I'm going to move them forward to get us started here. So we're going to go right to the first mistake, the very first mistake that people are making. And that is, I need to tell people to quit draining the social capital from your personal network. And what that means is a lot of people who get in the job search, they think, okay, now I'm in the job search, I need to tell every person that I know, all my friends, all my family, that I am in the job search. I'm going to send them a resume. I'm going to send them emails. I'm going to go ask them to have coffee with me. And what you're doing is people think that they're doing the right thing, and they say, well, they're my friends. They want to help me. Well, yeah, they are your friends, but they feel sorry for you. The crazy thing about the people who are closest to you is they feel sorry for you. They have pity on you. They don't know how to help you. They want you to do well, but then you might notice that they start to quit calling. They start to quit inviting you to things because you're the person who continually talks about being out of work. And so I have a great example. There's this guy named Roger, and Roger has been out of work since last May. And last May, he emailed a group of people, and I was on an email distribution list. And if I look at the distribution list, there's about 50 other people on this list. And he sends an email, and it says, requesting your guidance and assistance. He says, good afternoon. As you probably know, I've initiated a full-scale search for what comes next in my career after leaving this company at the end of March. So now I know he's been out of work for at least 2 months. At this point, I'm searching for both a CFO position and a board of directors opportunity. As noted on my resume, and he attached it, I have a very versatile career. I've also relocated 4 times. I believe my skills are transferable to other industries. I'm open to relocation. However, I prefer the Southwest. I really appreciated our relationship. And he goes on and on. It's about 5 paragraphs of all about him. And he says, anytime, if you'd be more comfortable being removed from these regular communications, just let me know. And I think, well, yeah, I really don't want these communications, but she keeps sending them to me, so I'll just keep using them as great examples. Anyway, that was in May. In June, I get another email. Good afternoon. I wanted to update you on the last email I sent in May. I still haven't found a job. And then he gives kind of a whole background on his search objectives and all that kind of thing. Then in July, he sends another email. Good afternoon. I wanted to email you since my last email I sent in June. He gives the same paragraph on the search objectives, the same kind of history of what he's done, attaches his resume yet again. The distribution list seems to grow bigger. Then in August, he sends another email. Same thing. He finally realized how to blind carbon copy everyone, so now the distribution list doesn't show anymore, but it's an update since his last email in July. In September, he sends another one. In October, another one. In November, he says, I'll bet you're thinking I'm going to send you another one of those monthly detailed and perhaps boring, yes, Roger, very boring, career transition updates. But instead, he'd like to wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. December gives another executive summary, attaches the resume. January gives another one. And all I can think is, you know what, Roger? All I know about you is you're out of work and you continue to be out of work, and you're really draining everybody on this list. I know you mean well, and I know you think, I know everyone wants to help you, but this is not the way to go about getting a job. You're just making these people feel sorry for you. The reality is there's this concept called the strength of the weak, and the people who know you the least are going to help you the most. So quit draining the social capital from your own personal network and start draining the social capital from other people's networks. So start connecting with new people. And instead of talking all about you, and sending your resume, make it more about the relationship. So that is mistake number one. I'm going to go on to mistake number two, is quit relying on recruiters. There's too many people that think, okay, I'm out of work. I should call every recruiter I know, or a lot of people ask me, hey, do you know any good recruiters? Well, the reality is what makes a good recruiter is someone who finds you a job. So I don't know. I don't know if I know any good recruiters, because you're just looking for the one who has exactly the job spec that of which you fit. And so too many people think that recruiters are going to find them a job. There's recruiters place less than 5% of the total population. And at the higher levels on the executive level, it's still less than 5%. Oftentimes, at the mid-tiers, people don't even hire recruiters. So I would say that it's not really benefiting your search to rely on recruiters for getting your next job. The thing that they're going to do is that they end up wasting a lot of your time, because they say, well, send me your resume. You send them the resume, and you get all this hope up. And then they say, well, it's interesting. I'm working on a search. You might be a fit, but you're really not exactly a fit. And then you start thinking, oh, well, I could work for that company. And you waste a lot of cycle time trying to figure out how you could work for that company, or getting excited about it, revamping your resume, all that kind of thing. And it's really wasting your time and wasting their time. So I would say quit relying on recruiters. If you're going to meet with a recruiter, then find out who they know. Work on them for their network, because they have a lot of clients, and they know other friends, acquaintances. Most recruiters I know have a very large network. So use them for your network. Use them for your benefit. The other thing that you need to think about is, how am I creating value for a recruiter? When I call them, just because they're a recruiter and I'm a job seeker, doesn't mean that they automatically have to meet with me. You need to figure out what value you bring to the table. And if that's helping them with a search, say, hey, what searches are you working on? I know a lot of people. Maybe I can help you out. That would help a recruiter more than anything. It's interesting. I have done a little recruiting in the past, and it's not my favorite thing to do, but it's interesting to see how people react when you say, I'm doing some recruiting. if you're recruiting for a specific job, is recruiting for a specific job for supply chain implementation consultants. And once people found out I was recruiting for that job, I was amazed how many people came to me and said, hey, well, I'm interested in a job. Let me give you my resume and maybe you know of something. And all I can think is, yeah, I don't know of anything else. All I'm doing is the supply chain implementation consultants. I don't know of any other jobs that meet your resume because I need to know what you're targeting, who you want to talk to, who you want to network with. I don't have any other job specs out there. So they think that, oh, I talked to a recruiter about a job. I think that's what their mindset is after we have a discussion. And I'm thinking, oh, another person just wasted my time because what I'm really looking for is a supply chain implementation consultant, and they're not it. So quit relying on recruiters thinking that you're going to get a job. You'll spend 80%, you'll waste 80% of your time. 80% of you will waste your time. 5% of you will not waste your time. There's another 15 in there that you may waste it, you may not. So it's not going to be the best use of your time. Mistake number 3, quit sounding like you're anxious and desperate. Let me tell you how anxious and desperate sounds. I run into a lot of people who are in the job search, and they say, look, Molly, I just need a job. You don't understand. I just need to pay the mortgage. And I'm thinking, no, I do understand. I get that. But if you take that attitude into your job search, then you're going to eat, one of two things is going to happen. You're either not going to get a job because you seem too anxious and desperate to take anything and you have no standards, or you're going to end up in the wrong place and be looking for another job in another 6 months, 9 months, a year, whatever it takes, whatever it might be. So you've got to step back and say, you know what? I need to have standards too. I have a friend who recently interviewed with a company, and the person he interviewed with, he actually was very much a jerk. And I said to my friend, I said, do you even want to work for that company? He says, Molly, you know, I didn't really like the guy, but if they offered me a job, I could use the money. And I thought, well, what kind of an attitude is that? You know, who wants to hire that employee? And why would you even want to go work for a company where you don't necessarily like the person? The next day, he had a meeting with someone who was fantastic, and he said, wow, this company's so interesting. The people are fantastic. And I said, well, okay, let's compare that meeting to the meeting you had yesterday. Given that you had the great meeting today, would you really take an offer from the company you met with yesterday? He said, no, now that I really think about it, I wouldn't. But people need to have standards. They need to quit being available to anyone and everyone and start deciding what you really want to do. So the other thing that happens with sounding anxious and desperate, turn that away from anxious and desperate and focus that into confidence. It's very obvious when someone is anxious in the job search. They prep too much. They are ready for any question that's thrown at them. They've done all the research on the web. And someone who's confident doesn't worry about walk in and prep too much and worry about every question thrown at them. Someone who's confident walks in and decides what questions they're going to get answered. And it's very obvious the demeanor. When you walk into a room with confidence versus desperation, people see that. They want to hire confident people. They want to hire winners. So go in and act like a winner. Quit acting like a desperate person who will take anything. All right. We're going to go. Why don't we? I see a question there. Why don't we open it up real quick to questions that people might have? Can we do that?
Thank you. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. You will be announced prior to asking your question. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Once again, if you have a question, please press star 1.
Okay, let's...
There's a question from Dave Powell, Molly.
Okay, great.
And Dave asks in the chat room, what are some of the good things to do?
What are some of the good... Well, there's a lot of really great things to do. And going to, we're talking a lot about the mistakes. The whole concept of this call is talking about the mistakes. But the good things to do are figure out who you want to work with. Go target the companies that you want to work for. Go be proactive and figure out what you want to do with your life. Quit being reactive. So I think the other thing that is really important is I'm going to make sure I don't cover that a little later, is quit sitting in front of your computer and applying online and start getting out and meeting people and having real-life conversations as real-life people. And I know we've talked about this in the past, about asking smart questions. The entire dynamic changes when you ask smart questions. I have another friend whose daughter was actually wanted to interview with a really interesting nonprofit company. And she was going to go into the interview, and she was ready with all her, you know, strengths and weaknesses and why am I a great fit for the company and ready to answer everything. And the father said, look, instead of waiting to answer everything, go in and control the interview. Go in with your list of questions and, you know, things like what compelled you to join the company? How do you like it here? You know, what's different about it? What makes you unique? If you were to not be here, where would you go? Is this what you always wanted to do? Things like that. And she ended up after had a screening interview, and through really smart questioning, they ended up loving her, and she's going back for a panel interview for a position. So, but she said in the meeting, the questions changed the entire dynamic of the meeting. It made it more like a peer instead of a superior, subordinate, or, you know, an unequal balance. And so you've really got to turn the tables on people and start acting like you're having conversations with people instead of worrying that you have to answer every question. And if you don't answer it right, they're not going to like you. The other thing that's really important is to be authentic. And so if you're authentic in everything that you do, you're going to find the right opportunity, and you'll weed out the wrong opportunities. So those are a few of the right things to do. Do we have other questions, Flor?
No, Molly, we don't have any questions, but I would like to ask the participants on the call and on the web to please limit their commentaries to questions for the chat room or to address specific individuals. I know that it's distracting for you as a speaker, as you also have a view of the chat. So thank you, Molly.
Okay, great. Great. Okay. We are going to go on to mistake number four. Mistake number four is too many people are continuing to, quote, look for a job, and everything is about a job search. So Roger, the person with all the emails who's sending it out, all he is about job search. And when you're constantly looking for a job, you're going to miss out on a large opportunities that might be sitting right in front of you. And you sit there and say, well, why would I miss out on those? Because if I'm looking for a job, then people will know that that I'm in the job search and the opportunity should be right sitting there right in front of me. But here's the problem. When you continue to lead with your job search, if the company's not hiring, end of discussion. You're not going to have an opportunity to get a second chance. There's an example of someone who had posted a question in the forum. I think it was Paul. And Paul said, you know what, Molly, I read your book, I got a referral to two people, and when I asked them for the meeting, they told me to apply online. And I thought, oh, no, Paul, you did it wrong. Why would they ask you to apply online for a meeting? And it's obvious to me that Paul said, I'm in the job search, and I was looking for jobs at your company, and I see you have a job at your company. And he made it all about the job. And what could have happened was Paul could have used those referrals to get to his connections, and call them up and say, hey, I got your name for Brad. I'm really looking forward to meeting you. When's a good time? And make it all about the meeting. Then sit in the meeting with Brad and start having a conversation about who Brad is, what's he all about, what he likes about the company, asking the really smart questions. And then if Brad's not hiring, then it's okay. but Brad probably knows people who would be other good people for Paul to network with. So he's really got to step back and quit leading with the job search, quit leading again with your resume, quit leading making it all about a job, and start focusing on building relationships. This is the key to everything, is building relationships. Because the more relationships you build, the better relationships you build, the more opportunities that are kind of come to you. The more people like you, the more they want you part of the team. When you make it all about the job search, you're not even giving people a chance to get to know you and get to like you, because it's all about the job search. Okay, so quit looking for a job and start building relationships, building a network. There's quite a few people who say, you know, Molly, I just don't have a very good network. What do I do? How do I start to build a network? And one of the things is just get out there. There are so many events out there, and there's lots of really great online. If you're going to spend time online, spend it here. There's lots of really great sites that give you calendars for each different city. And so just get out to different associations, whether they're your functional area, whether they're your industry, and start connecting with people, have meetings with people, and, go to the events, connect with people, and then follow up from there to get meetings to help build your network, and then find out from those people who you know, who they know, and get more connections. And some of you might be sitting there saying, well, Molly, how are you going to get a job by just having a bunch of meetings with people? The more you're targeted and the more you connect with the right people, if you have meetings with the right people at the right places, the opportunities will come. If you're not the right fit for a company and you're having a meeting with someone, the opportunity is not going to come. If you make it all about a job, you may never even get the meeting. So quit making it all about a job and start making it focused on the relationship. The other really important component of this is you have to control your network and their communications. In my blog and in the book, I have a concept called the difference between a referral and an introduction. And too many times, people will get a referral to someone else, and the person says, "Oh, well, let me send you their resume," and they want you to lead with your resume because they don't know what else to do. It's really important not to succumb to that. Do not send your resume to anyone. Get in meetings with people. Quit making it all about a job. Quit and start making it all about the relationships. With relationships, jobs will come. And I would question if many of you in the past most likely got your jobs because of a relationship. Okay? We're going to go on to the next question.
Molly, you do have a couple of questions.
I
just want to the operator to please remind folks how to ask their questions.
It is once again, it is *1 for your question, and we do have one question from the phone.
Okay, go ahead.
Ann Mowat.
Okay, I'm on. You can hear me?
Yep.
Yes, you can, Ann.
Yeah.
Ann,
okay, you said earlier that I think I'm quoting this right, that the people who know you the least will help you the most.
Yes.
I'd like you to expand on that and give some examples, please.
Okay, great. There's something called the strength of the weak. It's actually a really interesting phenomenon. It is so true in job search. And here's the initial theory, is the people who know you the most know you're out of work, like this guy Roger. He sent in all his job search stuff for the last almost a year now to his network. Everybody knows he's out of work. He still hasn't gotten a job. The people he knows the most can't seem to help him. It's amazing what happens when you are in the job search, when you put yourself in a network of people who don't even know you, especially people who are also in the job search. It's amazing how much help you get. The group that we started, Executives Network, there were four of us sitting around a coffee table talking about our job search. The other three people, I'd never met them before in my life. I couldn't believe how helpful they were. I was For the first year and a half in my search, I was talking to friends and family, and they were I loved them, but they were useless in my job search. All of a sudden, I go to one meeting with three other people that I met for the first time, very briefly, and I couldn't believe how much help I got. The next meeting I went to, where there were about eight of us, it was double the help. The next meeting, there were 20 of us, it was triple the help. It was absolutely astounding how many people helped me that I didn't even know. And then I realized, boy, the less I know them, the more they more helpful they are to me. So I'm going to quit hanging out with people I know, and I'm going to start hanging out with everyone I don't know because I'm going to get more help that way. And people who experience this in the job search, it's amazing to see the recognition when you're in a room to hear them say, yep, the same thing happened to me. Yep, the same thing happened to me. It's happening everywhere. And don't think it's a bad thing. It's just a reality. It's just an interesting phenomenon that happens. And instead of fighting it, just go with it and say, okay, if that's the case, then I'm going to go hang out with a lot of people I don't know. The other thing that you have to step back and think about is, you know, Anne, if someone needed your help, would you help them?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, right? So would everybody else. So you sit there and say, well, why would someone I don't even know help me? Well, we do that all the time. We meet people on a plane. We meet people at an event. We meet people walking down the street. We'll help them. We'd be glad to. And it makes you feel good. So don't take that joy away from other people and give them the opportunity to help you, even if they don't know you. The other interesting phenomenon about this strength of the weak and people you barely know helping you more is I think sometimes what happens is your friends and family, they know you from a specific place and time, a specific point in time. And they kind of pigeonhole you, but they put you into a box. And they don't realize all the things you're capable of. The people you just meet for the first time, that first impression, they actually think you're more capable of the things that you are capable of than the people who know you really well. Like, you know, sometimes I think my parents have no idea what I do and no idea what I'm capable of, but they know I'm their little girl, right? So you've got to put yourself out there to meet more people who you don't know. And you'll be amazed in a positive way of the results that you're going to get of connections, ideas, concepts, and help from people you barely know. But I'd also recommend looking at job search networking groups like Executives Network, or if you're looking for other ones, there's a thing called the Riley Guide, rileyguide.com, and it's R-I-L-E-Y guide.com. And on there, if you go to networking and support groups, they list all over the country different in-person networking groups for people in the job search for all levels. Other questions?
You have another from Donna Jeffers. Donna, did you want to ask your question? Star 0 for your line. Or if you'd like, I'd read it. Okay. Donna's question is, regarding networking, I have been very involved in business networking events. However, most attendees work for small companies. I'm interested in connecting with employers from larger companies with deeper pockets. How do I meet those people?
Okay. Well, Donna, I would love for you to be on the line. So if you can get Star 0 and get on the line, that would be great, because you're hanging out obviously at the wrong networking events.
Forgive me, that's Doreen Jeffers.
Doreen.
No, I read it wrong.
Okay.
Doreen Jeffers. Star 0, Doreen, for your line to go off mute.
So as we're waiting for that, Doreen, just pipe in when you're on. But there's a lot of networking events where I find people from larger companies attending, and it depends on what kind of functional area you are in, but what I'd focus on is the functional area associations. The Business Marketing Association is a great group from people from large companies who work in business-to-business marketing. IABC, International Association of Business Communicators, is a people who are focused on PR, but they're all from large companies. ACG is Association for Corporate Growth, and those are events where people are deal with mergers and acquisitions, kind of the mid-tier type companies. A lot of the technology councils in each one of the cities tend to have people from large technology companies, if that's what you're looking for. If you're in finance, FANG, Financial Executives Networking Group, is an area where you'll see finance people from larger companies, I would say mid-tier and larger companies. So what I tend to find is, and this is not true for all of them, but many of the chambers of commerce are going to be tend to be smaller companies, and so I tend to not go to those events. But look for other industry associations. Just because there's an association and it's not your industry, it's not your functional area, doesn't mean you can't go to it. You should go to it. So if you're in marketing, go to finance things. If you're in operations, go to legal things. It doesn't matter. But that's where you're going to connect with people and find people from all different kind of companies. The other important thing that you need to think about is if you keep running into people at smaller companies, ask them where they go, because what events they attend, because and what other people that they know in their network who work for larger companies. Because I have to say, I pretty much bet that every person knows people at both small companies and large companies. So don't worry about networking to someone. Think about networking through someone. Okay, I hope that answered it. Do we have another question, Flora?
There was a question from Donna. Donna, that's *0 for your question, or if you'd like, I can ask it for you.
If you'd like to ask a question, please press *1, which will place you into the queue, and I can open up your line.
Oh, thank you, operator. *1.
I don't know if you're talking about me, but I'm good.
Okay, Donna, are you done?
I'm done, yeah.
Okay. And Doreen no longer needs to answer a question. Okay. Molly, where?
Okay.
What are your questions?
I have Donna's line, Donna Milling. Your line is now open.
Great, Donna.
Hi. I was wondering, when you're in an interview and someone presses you to know why you left your last job, is it better to say you were laid off or that you were retired? In this case, it's early retirement. I mean, both of them have a stigma.
Well, I wouldn't say I was retired, because retired gives the impression that I'm done working. And I would say, I think that you think that there's a stigma with being laid off. There's no stigma anymore. There's so many people who've been laid off. Company was downsizing. Who cares? You know, it's everywhere. So I would focus on caught in a downsize. Wrong place, wrong time. No big deal.
Molly, I wonder if you can just kind of clarify. I was just listening to your – I think that you're absolutely correct that there are so many people looking for jobs now, and the economic situation has caused so many companies to do that. But I know that in past calls, just from the chat room here, in past calls you've said not to kind of imply that you're unemployed. So how do they manage
She was saying, Donna was saying, if you're in an interview and they say, why did you leave your last company? So if you left your last company because you chose to leave, that's one thing. If you left your last company because you were caught in a downsizing, that's another thing. If you're in an interview, yeah, normally don't tell anyone why you're out of work and how you became out of work. Don't tell anyone your job search story. The other important thing, Don, is to not continue on. Like, give the quick answer and then follow it up immediately with a really quick question so that they don't dwell on it. But the retirement, honestly, anyone who's retired, it makes you sound really old. So,
exactly, yeah.
Stay away from that. Stay away from that word. Any other questions?
At this time, we show no questions.
Okay. We're going to move on to mistake number 5. Mistake number 5 is all about being a pest, and people need to quit being a pest. Let me give you some context for this being a pest concept. Is too many times people will get an interview or have a really good meeting with someone, and that person will say, "Hey, well, follow up with me in a little bit, and I will I can connect you with someone else, or we can have another meeting, or whatever it might be," and what then they say, and then the person follows up, and let's say they follow up in 2 weeks or a week, and then they don't hear anything back, and then they follow up again in another week, and then they don't hear anything back, and then they keep thinking, well, they told me to follow up, but now they're not responding. So then they all of a sudden start to think it's them. They start to get really feel really self-conscious and think it's them. So they feel like they're starting to be a pest. I remember when I was in an interview, and I had the phenomenal interview with the company, and then they ended up flying me out to their corporate office, had a really lousy interview out there. And then when I came back to my hometown, Previously, I'd been hearing from the HR person pretty regularly. When I came back from my hometown, I heard nothing. And I thought, so I called, and then I called again, and then I called again, and all I thought was, oh, my gosh, I'm just being a pest. Something's wrong. I don't know what it is. I think something's wrong. I'm not quite sure. So what I did is I emailed the president. Instead of saying, hey, just following up, just checking in, I emailed the president an article that I had read in, I think, Fortune magazine about some of the concepts that we had talked about. And he immediately got back to me. And so instead of worrying about how you're going to follow up with someone and checking in and, oh, you told me to call back, start thinking about how you're going to be relevant to them, how you're going to provide value to them. There's a woman that I know who was interviewing over the holidays, and right after the New Year's, or right before the New Year's, the company said, hey, well, we'd like to schedule something as soon as possible. And so right after the New Year, she thought that something was going to be scheduled with the new company. And turns out that it's now, what, January 14th, and something still hasn't been scheduled with the new company. And she's like, well, I don't want to be a pest. Do you think they don't want me anymore? And I'm thinking, well, I don't know. You know, who knows what happened with the company? Maybe they're going through some other things that are a little more important right now for them. I'm not sure. But don't talk yourself into it. Why don't you be relevant to them, provide some value when you follow up, and take it from there. If they don't want you, they don't want you, and that's okay. The other important thing is too many times people make up things in their mind about what's going on with the company. Well, what did I do? I don't know what I did wrong. Well, maybe you did nothing wrong. Maybe some things changed within the company. Maybe they just found out that they're going to have a bad quarter. Who knows? It's not about you. Quit making it about you. But the other important thing is being relevant and providing value. I know that that one of the easy ways to really get yourself ingrained with a company, whether it's an interview or a networking meeting, is to provide a lead for them. Every networking meeting that I have with someone, I try to provide a lead. I say, you know who you ought to talk to? Hey, you know who might be a good customer of yours? And they're all ears when I say something like that. And it doesn't matter what functional role you are. Every role, every person in the company, if you're talking to the right level, they would appreciate the company getting a new customer because that means better jobs or more jobs for people and sustaining jobs. More revenue, sustaining jobs. So think about every person you meet. How am I providing value to them? Who do I know that they should connect with? What potential customer, what potential personal relationship, whatever it might be. But think about how you can connect with someone and be relevant to them and then have meaningful, relevant follow-up. Not just, hey, I'm checking in, but meaningful, relevant follow-up to say, hey, I just wanted to let you know I talked to John, and he's really looking forward to meeting you. Let me know when that happens, and let me know how much you guys connect with each other. So I think that's the most important thing about follow-up is an easy way to not be a pest is to continue to follow up with value. The other thing that you there's some timing things that happen, too. Sometimes companies say, well, we really want to hire someone before the end of the year. Like this happened a lot, I heard, before the end of the year. And then the end of the year comes and goes, and the person didn't get hired, and they kind of freak out and think, well, what happened? What did I do? Well, maybe you did nothing. Maybe you did nothing wrong. Maybe, again, the company just has some changes. The other thing is I've seen where people have had companies might have a kickoff in January. And they say, well, you know, we really want to get you on board because we want you to be part of the kickoff. And let's say the kickoff is January 22nd. Well, if January 22nd comes and goes, guess what? You're probably not an opportunity for the company. You're probably not an option because they've let that time frame come and go. And so now you don't need to worry about that company anymore. You can kind of take them off your list. It reminds me of the girl, the desperate girl who wants to get asked out for Valentine's Day, and February 14th comes and goes, and, you know, you pretty much know whether you're going to have a date on Valentine's Day by February 13th, I hope. So once February 13th comes along, and especially if February 14th comes along and you don't have a date, you can pretty much write it off till next year. So things about you don't have to get so hung up on, well, I didn't hear back from them when they said they were going to call me back, or this event came and went. If it's a good opportunity and if you're the right fit, things will happen. If it's not and you're the wrong fit, things won't happen. And just let it go. So I hope that's a little helpful on quit being a pest. There's also a blog I have called How to Follow Up Without Being a Pest. So it talks a little bit more about what to do in that. Okay, mistake number 6 we will move on to. And this is to don't quit job searching until you started your first day of work. And then, once you've started your first day of work, start networking for your next job. One of the things you have to remember is a marriage isn't finalized until on your wedding day you say, I do. Okay? Once people, I've seen too many offers that fell through in the very final stages. And again, it may have been an issue for the company, that there might have been a decision that was changed. Someone who was leaving decided to stay. A bad quarter, a change in direction. You never know. I know too many people who get right to the end and the company says, yep, we're going to make an offer. And then they make an offer and the person quits their job search. They're like, oh, this is great. Now I can take a little vacation before I start my next job. And then the offer falls through. It gets rescinded, whatever it might be. And then the person has to basically scramble and figure out where they left off and start over again. And so always think about, how do I continue my job search even right up until the day that I'm starting work? And even then, once I start work, how do I start networking for my next job? Beyond that. So there's a guy that I know named Jim, and he was working for a healthcare company, and he'd been there for about 7 months and just hated it. I mean, he was miserable. And he's a chief information officer. And he told me he was leaving the company. I was having dinner with him and his wife one night, and I said, well, Jim, what are you going to do? He said, well, I've actually... He goes, I gave my notice today, and I'm going to stay there for another month. I said, okay, that's great. Have you thought about what you want to do in the future? And he said, well, actually, I'm in line for 7 other opportunities. And he started naming these opportunities, and these were fantastic opportunities. Every single one of them were amazing. And I said, geez, Jim, I know people who've been out of work for a year. Think about Roger. And he doesn't have that many opportunities, and you're not even out of work yet, and you're in the pipe for 7 different things. How did that happen? He says, Molly, I network all the time. In every job that I take, I'm constantly networking. I take every call from every person. I go meet with everyone. And he networks for his next job in his current job. I think too many people also think, well, once I landed a job, this is great. I can quit networking and I can quit job searching. And I can just focus completely on my job. And that's a huge mistake that people make, because then they focus completely on their job. Issues happen. Something comes up. They end up finding themselves out of work, and they're starting at square zero again. They don't have the power of the situation. So don't quit job searching and networking until you've started your first day of work. And then once you have started, start networking for your next job. Okay? Next thing is next final mistake. Mistake number 7, quit getting in your own way. I see this all too often. It's the self-talk. It's the, well, I don't really have that experience, so that's not a good opportunity for me. There's this guy, Lou. I was in a meeting with him about 2 weeks ago. And he's got a really interesting background, operations, has a little bit of environmental background. And I said, you know, Lou, you ought to really check out recyclables, I think it was, and or environmental waste and areas like that, or alternative energy from an environmental standpoint. And he said, well, you need to be an environmental engineer, and I'm not an environmental engineer. And I said, well, I don't know about Lou. I find that he goes, well, yeah, you absolutely have to have that degree. And I said, well, I kind of find it odd that I don't believe that every person in the entire industry has a degree in environmental engineering. And you certainly have some background in environmental work, so I don't understand why you'd need a degree. But he kept getting in his own way, saying, well, I don't have any experience there, so I can't do that because they will never hire me because I don't have that experience. There's another woman, Joan, and she you give her any idea, and she tells you all the reasons why it's not going to work. Well, no, I can't do that because those companies never hire people like me. Well, I'm thinking, yeah, they're never going to hire people like you with that kind of attitude. So quit turning down every single opportunity and every single idea that people have for you, because and start opening up your mind to the possibility that there's some ideas that might come to you that at first glance might look like obstacles, might think, well, why would anyone want to hire me in that industry? And you've got to get out of your own way and say, well, why wouldn't people want to hire me in that industry? Why wouldn't people want to hire me in any industry? Because I'm a good person. I know how to do things well, and I can figure it out. And the reality is anyone can figure out any industry. You don't have to have umpteen years of experience in technology to go into technology. You learn a lot once you're in technology, but none of us started in technology. I mean, you're not born with technology background in your blood. So quit getting in your own way and start realizing that there might be opportunities, and you should investigate them. When things come to you and they don't sound like something that fits your background, say, who cares? Don't worry. Don't let your past get in the way of your future. Don't let what you've always done get in the way of what you could do in the future. So quit getting in your own way. Can we open it up more? Do other people have more questions?
There are a couple in the chat room.
Okay.
Rich, Eric, and Ron, if you'd like to ask your questions live, operator, can you tell them how to do that?
Star 1.
If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1.
And Molly, you have a question in the chat room for yourself.
Okay. There you go.
Star 1 for your questions to Molly, please.
One moment for the first question.
Hey, while we're waiting for that question, I'm going to reply to Eric's question. Eric says, how do you put off replying to one job offer while still looking? So sounds like, Eric, you have someone who's given you an offer, but you still want to look. So one of the two things is going on. Either you don't want to take that job because you think there's something else better, or you don't want to take that job because it doesn't matter if there's something else better. You don't want to take that job. And it may be one of those things where you take a job just to take a job. I would say that I do a couple things. One is, if I really didn't want the job, I would politely decline. It's amazing how sometimes that job comes back if you do want it. I mean, if you maybe want it, but we're kind of waiting for something better to come along. I once declined a job, and even though I didn't have anything else in the hopper, because I knew that it would be the wrong fit. I knew that I would be the silver bullet. I knew that I'd be working 24 hours a day, and if I couldn't solve the company's problems, then the company was going downhill. So I felt like the company's problems were too big for one person to solve everything, and I felt like if I took that job, sure, I'd have revenue I'd have income for about 3 to 6 months, but then I'd be looking again. I'd be in the exact same place I was before. So I bypassed the income, which I really could have used the income, but I bypassed it because I knew it would get in the way of another opportunity. If you think it's an okay job, but you think there might be some things better, but you really could get excited about the job, then I might accept the offer, extend out the offer date, extend out the date, the start date a little bit further, continue to look, and if something else came along between now and the start date, then you could look at something else. The other thing is, I actually I took a job, and I even had some interviews after I had already taken the job because I'd set them up before I had taken the job. And I continue to meet with those people because you never know what's going to happen. So I don't think it hurts to take a job and then if there's another interview that you had coming up a month later, go on that interview. Go meet with those people. Have an interesting discussion. It's okay. I think the days of you might sit there and go, well, gosh, Molly, that's an awful way to think about being loyal to a company and committed to a company. But the important thing that you need to remember is it's your life, it's your job search, it's your career, and you need to control it. And if that means taking something that hits 80% while still looking for something that hits 100%, then that's okay. That's okay. So it's probably not what a company wants to hear, I'd say. Okay, other questions?
We have a question from Ron Richmond. Your line is now open.
Yes, this is Ron. You talk about retirement issues, if you discuss that creates an age problem. How would you go about avoiding age as an issue?
Well, the way I'd go about avoiding age as an issue is I wouldn't make it all about me and my background. I'd ask people a lot of questions about what you do and why do you do it and how you got into it. And when you do that, people quit worrying about how old you are, and they start thinking about, wow, you could bring a lot to the table. Because the reality is, typically, the older you are, typically, the more you could bring to the table. That kind of is the theory that goes, right? And people, so if you are worried about an age problem, you've got to remember, I can't apply online. I can't, if people say 3 to 7 years experience, if people say 10 years experience and I have 30, I'm going to be overqualified. I'm going to be the wrong fit. So you don't want to put yourself in that world. You want to go connect with people, have interesting conversations, and probably interesting conversations with people of your peer group or close to your peer group, because they're going to be the ones, I would say, who are going to realize the great value that you bring to the table. But make it all about them. Don't make it about you. Make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
We have another question from Jim Litzus. Your line is now open.
Jim?
Oh, yes, hi. I wanted to ask the logic you might use to consider a temporary or contract job while you really still want to get a permanent job.
Well, I would use very different logic on a temporary job or a contract job. If it's a contract that I could execute tactically and I would still make time for my job search, then I would, and it's income coming in, I would take it. If the other thing that would be interesting is a lot of times contract jobs lead to permanent jobs, and it not necessarily at the same company, but because the relationships you build in the contract job, it will lead to other opportunities. So if it seems like a good fit, if it would be beneficial for you to do, then I think that would be a no-brainer to go ahead and take it.
Okay.
If it's something that would be painful for you, then I wouldn't take it. I'm thinking about a couple contract jobs that I had taken while I was out of work, and one of them was right in line with what I did. I needed the money. It was a quick and easy. It was easy for me to do, and I thought, okay, this is a quick way to make some quick cash. There was another contract job that came up about 2 months later that would have been painful for me to do, and I felt like they were not set up for success, and I would be the fall guy, and I did not take that one, even though I could have used the income. Okay, Flora, were you going to say something?
Yes, forgive me for interrupting. Tracy Dodge, and I'm sorry, Tracy, if I mispronounced your name, has a question in the chat room.
Okay, I see that. I'm gonna read the question that she has. She says, when employers' job postings are industry or job-specific in their job qualifications, how do you get them to read your resume? Okay, Tracy, you're killing me. Quit making it about your resume. Here's what you do. First of all, do not apply online and quit looking online. Ask yourself, is this a company I want to go work for? then go network into that company. Connect with people who know people at that company. Go meet with them. Have interesting conversations. When you have the interesting conversation, nobody cares what your background is. When I was looking, I know I've told this story before, my big technology background, and I happened to be talking to the CEO of a bagel manufacturing facility. And I was asking him a lot of questions. I was taking a tour of his facility, and I was asking him a lot of questions about the facility. I'm like, well, what goes here, and why do you do this, and what about this customer, and how do you transport goods from here to here, and like looking at from an optimal standpoint, not that I had any operations background, any food manufacturing background, any retailing background, which is all the things that they did. At the end of 40 minutes, he said, Molly, I'd like you to come work for me. I go, doing what? He goes, be my chief operating officer. I'm like, oh, no, you've got the wrong person. And I think, first of all, I thought, if you saw my resume, you'd know that I have no experience in anything that you do. But it didn't matter because we had an interesting conversation. I asked a lot of really great questions about why you do this, why you do that, how are you doing this, how are you going to market, how are you going to be an amazing company. And he took that as me having knowledge. And it didn't matter that I had no background in their industry or the specific job. He knew that I could figure it out. That's the key, Tracy. So quit applying online. Quit worrying about people reading your resume. I tell you what, once people read your resume and if you're going for a different industry, once people read your resume, game over. The key is to never get them to read your resume and make it all about the smart questions that you have. Okay.
Doreen Jeffers has another question for you in the chat room, Molly.
Okay. Oh, Doreen Jeffers, I think we answered that one before, didn't we?
No, she has a new question. What advice do you have for candidates who prefer contract work, 6 weeks to 2 years?
Oh, okay. Well, first of all, I would say 2 years is sometimes a job, not a contract, anymore. But I would do this the same. I would take the same approach as you would for a regular job search. A lot of regular jobs, a lot of people say, well, I would like to get contract work. When you're looking for contract work, you don't always find it. When you're looking for a job, you often find contract work. So I would approach it completely like looking for a job. And then if they want to offer you a job, say, that's really interesting, but I'd love to be on contract instead. That's just a negotiating point. So that's what I would focus on. That being said, if you're in a very much a tech role where you're looking at contract placement, then a lot of companies do hire contract versus full-time. But I take the same approach with it of identifying the companies that you really want to work with, having interesting conversations with people, and then saying I want to work on contract versus full-time. Okay.
Those are all the questions in the chat room, Molly.
Okay. Do we have any on standby, star one?
We do have a question from Wolf Kramer. Your line is now open.
Hi, this is Wolf Kramer. My question is related to all this relationship building. Can you comment on effective ways to use social media to do that?
Well, Wolf, I think there's a couple things. One is too many people are trying to get too many people in their LinkedIn and too many people in their Facebook, which I'm assuming you're talking about, or followers on Twitter, thinking that, well, I'm networking because I have 500 people in my LinkedIn profile. And that's not networking. That's not building relationships. That's just having 500 people in your LinkedIn profile. Who cares about that? The relationship happens, you know, nothing happens, none of the big things happen until you go face-to-face. And I would focus on the quality versus the quantity. Social media gives you the quantity. In-person gives you the quality. So focus on getting out, connecting with people, having interesting conversations. And don't do it online. I also see too many people trying to have meetings online over email. And texting and, and having conversations that way. And that's not a way to build a relationship at all. You really never find out anything about a person. Not anything. You find out how quick of a typist they are. But you don't end up really truly building the relationship online. You need to take it offline, face-to-face. And so I would focus really heavily on getting out there, connecting with people. Make sense?
Sure.
I was going to say, Wolf, that being said, too, I use my LinkedIn and my Facebook for status updates to let people know what I'm doing. It's all about me, 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 me. Sometimes people comment on it. Sometimes they don't. But when I really want to build a relationship, I go have lunch with someone.
Molly, you have a question from Kirk in the chat room.
Okay.
I tried to network with the people from the company I am interested in, but could not find a way to network with anyone. I tried LinkedIn and some other groups. What is your approach?
Kirk, I say you didn't try hard enough. it would be amazing to me if you could name, if you couldn't find anyone at a company that knew someone at that company. You need to get a referral to someone. I wish I knew the company name because I'm curious if I know someone over there. But the way I often do that, I will use LinkedIn. If let's say it's Kraft Foods. I don't think I know anyone from Kraft Foods, so I'll go into LinkedIn, type in Kraft, and then see if someone I know knows someone I know. If they don't, then I start thinking about, well, who's in the food industry? And who would know people in the food industry? So I wouldn't worry about Kraft. I'd worry about Nabisco. Well, I think Nabisco is Kraft now. But other competitors in the food industry, because they tend to know each other. So I would, if you can't find someone from the specific company, find someone in the same industry. If you can't find someone in the same industry, go to people that in the functional area you know and say, hey, do you know anyone in this industry? I'm looking for someone from Kraft. So I think you need to try harder. Try harder to get a meeting with someone. Try harder to get a referral to someone at that company. And again, it comes back to the people you barely know will probably help you the most. If you're going, you should also go to the industry association meeting. If I'm looking for someone from Kraft, I'm sure it's going to go to the food industry association meeting and see if anyone knows anyone from Kraft. I bet the person who runs the food industry association meeting knows someone from Kraft or whatever company it is. Okay.
Molly, you have several questions. David Strickland has a question. Please press star 1. And Mowat has another question. And Vanessa Batista has another question. So if you could please press star 1, and you can ask Molly your questions.
We also have a question in queue from Michelle McDivitt.
Let's start with Michelle. And Vanessa Batista, also please make sure you do star 1, too, because I want to clarify your question. So let's start with Michelle. Go ahead, Michelle.
Michelle, hi. Your line is now open.
Hello. I've got an interesting reverse challenge. I've always been able to reinvent myself into different industries. Now I'm finally in an industry that I was enjoying working. But I think I'm finding some challenges going back to small companies because whenever I put on the IBM cap, they're like, because we've been tailored at IBM and sometimes we don't get to do all the tasks that a job requires. And it's not that I haven't done them in the past, but you can see where there's candidates out there that have been doing like the five main things they want in that job every day. They're going to take them over you. What are some, you know, because I've proposed convincing, like, you know, try me as a contractor. I know that I can still do all those things, you know, if you're showing some hesitation. You know, give me a project and I'd be happy to, you know, show you that I can, you know, do something.
Because they're worried that you're a big company person and you can't relate to all the things you need to do at a small company.
Right, but all my other companies, like before those 5 years at IBM, all my other small companies, I did all those various tasks, and I'm finding
well,
that.
Well, then, okay, so here's what I would do. Is Michelle right?
Yes.
Okay, here's what I would do. I think that you, when you're interviewing with them, you're not asking enough questions related to issues of a small business. you need to start focusing more on how do I expose the fact that they have small business issues and I know the answers to those small business issues. And so I don't know if the question is, well, how many hats do you wear? Because I remember when I was at Company X, I wore about 50. So I'm just curious if this is the same, or where do you find yourself in the growth curve, or what do you find is your biggest challenge right now? And focus on the questions that would expose those issues that show you don't have to tell them you have small company experience. You have to let them realize you have small company experience by the smart questions that you ask. So I would change the nature of the questions you're asking and change the nature, the approach of the conversation you're having.
Thank you. That's good food for thought.
Okay, good. And tell me how it goes.
The question is recuperating, how to get back into that company, because I still think I have a shot because they've been getting contractors, but they haven't hired someone full-time because they haven't found that person that they really like.
Okay, so the approach you need to take is you need to go, whether the hiring manager, who's the hiring manager?
The UX design lead is, I assume there's probably the product manager as well is going to be involved.
Okay, so I would try and get in an event. I would try and find out what events they might be going to and go to a similar event and kind of run into them. Oh, my gosh, how are you guys doing? You know, and make it not about the, you know, make it serendipitous.
Yeah.
And start asking the questions. Ask the smart questions.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
Several questions in the chat room that if you would please ask them live. Andrew, you had a question. Anne, you had another question. David Strickling had a question.
Oh, okay. David, I'm going to answer your question because it's real easy to answer. You put it, to arrange a meeting with someone, what do you make the subject or the purpose of the meeting? What you do, first of all, get a referral to that person, and you make it about the referral. David, Tom said you are fantastic, and I really was looking forward to spending a few minutes of your time to gain some insight into the industry or into finance, whatever the functional area is. Make it about the industry that they're in. And when I said, who knows all about this industry? They said, you're the man, and I cannot wait to pick your brain about the industry. So make it about the industry is what I would do. That would be the purpose of the meeting. The other thing is, why are we having this meeting? Because my friend says so. Your referral source is referring you because they think it would be a good use of both of your time. So use that referral source. If you go onto my blog where it's called How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, it will also give you all the words to say, specifically the emails, the calls to do to get those meetings. All right. Andrew Stafford, I'm going to answer his as well. He asks, how do you break into small business entrepreneurial ventures where there are only three or four people involved? I would get referrals to them from people that they used as advisors, lawyers, bankers, accountants. The first thing when you're a small business, the first thing you do is you hire a lawyer. The second thing you do is hire an accountant. So those are the people who can refer people, and those are the people who are going to know. In each city, if you ask enough lawyers, hey, who deals with entrepreneurial ventures, you're going to find out who the key people are that deal with entrepreneurial ventures. The other thing is you're going to be able – there's some associations that meet that are targeted toward entrepreneurial groups, and one is TIE. TIE.org, and it stands for the Indus Entrepreneur, and the other is MIT Enterprise Forum. So I would go to those events, and you're going to get access to entrepreneurs. And also, very important, look out for the bankers, lawyers. Ask the people who are the people who do entrepreneurial ventures. Oh, and then Andrew came back and said he met a lawyer at TIE. Perfect. Wonderful. You're doing the right thing. Way to go. Okay. And I also want to make a comment. Kathleen said, I took Molly's advice and checked out local churches. I found an amazing network here in Dallas. Don't worry if you're not a member. They're open to anyone and are great for networking. So she's absolutely right. Do we have any other questions on the phone?
We have two questions in queue. Our first question comes from Vanessa Baptista.
Oh, great. Thanks, Vanessa. Go ahead and ask your question.
Hello. I'd like to know what kinds of contracts that you think that people shouldn't sign. Like, we have a contract in here that's about 44 hours of contract, but we usually work only 4 hours so per week. So do you think it's a good contract to sign? Because we usually do overtime, and we can't charge for 16 hours.
You can't charge the overtime. Well, if it's a 44, if it's a 44-hour contract and you can only work 40 hours of it, I would revisit the scope of the contract and say, okay, for 40 hours, we're going to have to take out this. The other reality is you're only talking 4 extra hours. If you really wanted the contract, it would depend on the client. If you really wanted the contract, I would work the 44 extra hours on my dime just to get the contract if you thought it would develop into better business. If it's just something to actually check off and do the contract, I would revisit the scope of the contract and say we can do it in 40 hours and only do this much, or we can do it in 44 and do this much. Pick one, and let the customer pick it. Okay.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. And there was another question online on the phone.
Excuse me. Have another question. It comes from Ann Mowat. Your line is now open.
Okay.
Hi, it's Ann Mowat, actually. The question is this. Can you please talk a little bit?
Annie, it's very hard to hear you.
Is this better?
Yes.
Much better.
Okay, yeah, it's Ann Mowat. The question relates to using volunteer activities and work, and I'm wondering if you could just give us your perspective on that, please.
Ann, I think it's a great idea to use volunteer activities for potential opportunities. I myself actually, I'd volunteered on a political campaign and they ended up hiring me on contract for a couple months, and I was one of only paid two paid staffers to work on the campaign, which was great, but I didn't start out thinking, oh, I'll get a full-time job with them. There's another person I know who is now the executive director of a nonprofit, and the way he started was he was volunteering, and he was spending a lot of time in their offices because he didn't have a job, and they ended up hiring him as the executive director. So I think it's a great idea, but definitely pick something to volunteer with that would be interesting to you, right? And
right.
Something that you would want to get into. And then don't worry if it doesn't lead to something. The other thing you need to remember is there are other volunteers, and there's if you want to be the person who, if it's a nonprofit, the person who deals with donors, that's always a good network to deal with because they have the money and they probably have the good jobs and they would be good people to network with as well. It gives you a good reason to call them and extend your network.
Thank you.
Okay?
Yeah.
Any other questions?
We show no questions. Thank you.
There was a comment, Molly, in the chat room from Claire.
Yeah, Claire was saying that Crossroads Career Network is a good source of networking, meetings, assistance, usually associated with local churches, Crossroads Career Network. So, yeah, there's a lot of the local churches, and again, you don't have to be a member of the church, but a lot of them have career networking groups. So if you're of any level, go to those. If you're of a director VP C level, go to Executives Network on executivesnetwork.com. So... okay, I think we'll close up here, Floor, and I just want to...
Molly, since we had... let's make better mistakes tomorrow, yes, except for the audio conferencing.
Right.
I wonder, Molly, if you would do us the courtesy, if you don't mind, of just a very quick chart review of some of the early ones. A few of the people who stayed with you throughout the call joined in as late as 30 minutes.
Okay, so just going quickly through
just very
quickly number one.
Your charts, if you
and do you
mind.
Want me to go through the charts too?
Just the chart, yeah.
Okay.
Do you want me to move those?
No, I got it. Again, mistake one, quit draining the social capital from your personal network. Mistake two, quit relying on recruiters. Mistake three, quit sounding like you're anxious and desperate. Four, quit looking for a job. Start building a network. Five, quit being a pest. Start bringing value to the table. Six, quit. don't quit job searching until you started your first day of work, and then start networking for your next job right away. So never stop networking. And 7, quit getting in your own way. Quit the self-talk and deciding you're not in the game before you ever get in the game. Let yourself be in the game. So let's make some better mistakes tomorrow. Let's not repeat these for 2010. And let's make sure that we quit making the mistakes altogether and start building relationships. And the other thing to do is quit doing what you're doing because it's not working. So, you know, if it's working, great. But if it's not working, then quit it and start doing the things that are going to work. Be open to the possibility that there might be other things that you could do that will help you land your next job. If people do have more questions, please feel free to post them in the Greater IBM Career Forum. There's a section called Ask Molly. And then I also have a blog, mollywendell.com. And then the book. I tell you, a lot of people are reading this book, following it exactly word for word, and they're getting jobs. And not only are they getting jobs, but in the meantime, while they're doing the process, they're actually having fun. It's exciting. The job process is no longer a drain, but it's starting to be fun. So I would highly recommend taking a look at that. Okay. I think that's it, Flora. I'm going to
Thank you, Molly. We just want to thank you again for sharing your expertise with us. This has been one of your largest calls attendances yet, and we do want to encourage people to continue the dialogue with Molly in the forum. That's in greaterIBM.com. Molly reads your comments on a regular basis. She responds to each and every comment, and you could extend that access by connecting with Molly online. You could also attend her blog, and she has it listed here. And then, of course, you can contact Molly or through the blog by the book. Molly will be with us again in a month's time, and until then, we thank you all for assisting this afternoon, and thank you for the patience with the mishap. We look forward to seeing you in the next call.
Okay, thanks,
goodbye.
Everybody. Bye-bye.